You're listening to Bedroom Beethovens, where notable music makers break down stories accompanied by songs and melodies documenting growth through their 10,000-hour journey. And me? Well, my name is Cello, your host. This episode is brought to you by Podcorn, which might be the most valuable resource for all my podcasting peers out there. If you've ever heard an ad on the show, I received it through one portal, one website, one sole marketplace. And I'm very happy to share it with anyone listening who wants to plunge into the world of podcasting themselves. It's really simple. All Podcorn does is connect podcasters to amazing podcast sponsorship opportunities. This can be in the form of host-read ads, but they also have creative integrations such as interviews, product giveaways, and more. They give you the autonomy to format it the way you want, because when you work with Podcorn, you never give up any rights to your podcast, and Podcorn is here to support you at every step and ensure you're protected and compensated for the work that you do for brands. I've been working with them all year long, and not only have I built up a good reputation with numerous brands, but let's be honest, I get to make money doing it while still having full control and creative freedom of my podcast, and that's nice. So click the link in my show notes to sign up to Podcorn and start browsing sponsorship opportunities today, or visit podcorn.com.
I am a bedroom Beethoven.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 92 of the podcast.
You know I'm back like I never left.
My guest this week is...
My name's Skylar Gray, and I am a singer, songwriter, and producer. Probably most recognized for my work with Eminem, Puff Daddy, Dr. Dre, Nicki Minaj...
Yeah, welcome to the show.
Bedroom Beethovens. I was like, that's me.
I feel glorious, glorious. Got a chance to start again. I was born for this, born for this. It's who I am, not gonna forget. I made it through the darkest part of the night. And now I see the sunrise.
This week, singer, songwriter, and producer Skylar Gray is on the program. I'm looking at a silver lining of this quarantine. It really forced her to stay in her home studio and work and write alone just the way she likes it. So these four songs that she's released in October have to have been the most freeing since she can surround herself with the people she wants to be around, shoot the visual she wants to shoot, and make the music she wants to make without any outside influences. We talk about her journey to get to this point and also what lies ahead. If you have found yourself on this podcast, thanks for listening. And if you didn't know, this podcast can be heard wherever you get podcasts and on the website bedroombeethovens.com, where you'll find past episodes and other cool stuff like patreon.com/bedroombeethovens. It's the easiest way to support me. You know, give a little, get a little. It's a win-win. But real talk, ultimately, I'm just happy you tuned in, no matter how you do it, so I can bring you another episode with some of the most creative people on the planet. For even more info, visit SkylarGrayMusic.com or hit up the store at store.SkylarGrayMusic.com. Enjoy the latest single, The Devil Made Me Do It. And in her latest video, she may or may not be dressing up like Beethoven. Hey, you didn't hear it from me. Skylar Gray joins me on the show, and it's a good one. Hope everyone's having a great day and you're staying safe out there. Yeah, is this quarantine giving you some flashbacks to being alone in Wisconsin growing up a little bit?
I love quarantine. I never really loved traveling and touring and, you know, traveling to sessions and stuff. I liked doing the work. I liked doing the shows, but I don't like the actual travel part. So I'm actually pretty stoked about quarantine.
I'm there with you. And if we have to find any silver lining in this whole pandemic, I don't know if Britney Spears would have woken up on a random day indoors and just danced to your music. So at least
it's not
that
bad. Dude, how cool was that?
That's awesome.
I was tripping.
We have the pandemic Britney to thank for that. Well, it's funny because, you know, my daughter is 6 years old, and you said you knew what you wanted to do from that age, and you seem to be working towards that your whole childhood. I wish my daughter had it all figured out at this age. You know, how on earth does that happen? Is there anything a parent can do, or is that just the universe working mysteriously through you? You know, what do you think?
I think it's a combination of things. Like, my mom always says that I was born singing, like I popped out of the womb singing. I don't know. I think she's being facetious, but it was definitely something that was like in my blood. When I was 2, I guess there's this like story that I sang harmony when we were singing Happy Birthday to one of my aunts, and my whole family was like, what, like, how does a 2-year-old who can barely say the words know how to sing a harmony? And so they always tell that story. And yeah, so it's just been in my blood. And then when I was 6, I started taking piano lessons and started performing with my mom. Our first show was a Mother's Day show at a library, played like a 45-minute set. And then from that point on, I was just all in.
So what's crazy is, you know, I'm reading, like, you dropped out of high school at 17, and your sister is a doctor, right?
Yeah.
Which is amazing because it shows that there's no traditional path to success. You both found it in your own unique way.
Yeah, totally. She's the brains.
I mean, she went to Harvard, didn't she?
She had like she actually like spent a year traveling after undergrad, and then she went back to school for med school because she realized it's what she wanted to do. And so she started out in Granada. I'm not sure how to say it. And then she ended up like transferring, yeah, up to Harvard. And
that's crazy. Yeah. And I know she's in LA now. I know you moved to LA. You were smart. You just didn't like school. I think you were just music obsessed.
Yeah, I was music obsessed. I mean, I remember spending my lunch periods in the piano room, band room, eating my sandwich at the piano, not socializing.
let's take a song like Walk on Water. That's a song that you've been trying to write since that age. So even at age 6, you had a grand vision.
I mean, I think my first song was about a green popsicle. I wasn't thinking about Walk on Water.
Yeah. But the journey led up to that.
Exactly. It's like, you know, every time you write a song, or at least when I write a song, I'm trying to do better than my last one and, like, you know, create a masterpiece every time. And some of them really suck, and it just is part of the game. And then sometimes there's these songs that like feel like the culmination of everything that I've worked for. And that's like Walk on Water to me was one of my most proud moments as a songwriter, just because I was so stoked about the actual song itself.
Like I walk on water, 'cause I ain't no Jesus. I walk on water, but only when it freezes, 'cause I'm only human, just like.
So when you start collaborating with people outside of your mom, let's say you moved to California, you work with a gentleman by the name of Jonathan in Goldsby. Was that a positive experience?
Yeah, he was great. I learned a lot from him, actually. When it comes to like producing, he was one of the first people that I sat and watched work on Pro Tools. He kind of like taught me my beginning stages of Pro Tools learning. So yeah, it was a great experience working with him.
Because this is where it gets kind of bizarre. You know, you take a 16-year-old girl who sings about getting out of PE, who becomes one of the biggest actresses in the world, who just so happens to be Captain Marvel in the Marvel film. So you're writing like teen angst songs for her, yeah, alongside Jonathan.
Yeah. Man, you're bringing up some old stuff. It's great. I forgot about that.
Well, it trips me out because you could have very well have been a Brie Larson. You went to the American Conservatory Theater who knows? You know, I could see you in a Marvel movie.
Hey, I would love to do that.
So you're at this crossroad in life, right? A little bit after that, where you're like, you're broke. You're not knowing where you're going to get your next meal. You overcome that situation. You get a big break working and writing for Eminem and whatnot. The shift between broke and successful must have been pretty sudden. What was like your first big purchase once you found yourself on the other side? You know, were you frugal with your money, or were you like, you know what? I need to reward myself. I made it.
Eventually I bought a house, but it wasn't like immediately, like I went out and bought a Lamborghini or something. I maximized my 401k. So that was pretty exciting. I'd never been able to do that before.
So you're smart with the money. Well, I always look at someone like, you know, Titty Boy, who had a level of success and then became 2 Chainz, and everything he touches now is platinum. And sometimes I sit back and think, well, he's the same guy. He looks the same. So it had to be something mentally, something below the surface. So if Holly Brook failed, what is it about Skylar Gray that succeeded?
Yeah, I think as Holly Brook, which was my given name by my parents, I was still trying to figure out who I was. And I went down a lot of paths in music and in my life to like try to figure it out. And then it led me to that moment of feeling like I failed. After I had a record deal and lost it, after I dropped my first album with Warner Brothers, it didn't really go very well. I had one hit song with Mike Shinoda of Linkin Park called Where'd You Go?
Where'd you go? I miss you so. Seems like it's been forever that you've been gone.
And then I didn't really follow that up with anything. So, yeah, I've had this moment of like, what am I doing with my life? You know, when I was like 23, started questioning every decision I'd ever made, because I'd been working from age 6, tunnel vision focus, to age 23. And then I suddenly fell on my face. And so I was like, what am I doing? And so I moved away to this cabin in the woods, and I, you know, just did some soul searching. Got back in touch with like the reason I love music, because I kind of lost the passion and the romance for music at that point. I had just been so corrupted by the industry and didn't even know why I was doing it. So I had to fall back in love with music, and I had to isolate myself from the rest of the world pretty much in order to find that. And so then I came out of that situation feeling like reborn. Like I had a new energy, a new zest for life, a new zest for the music industry and diving back into songwriting and stuff. So I just felt like I needed to change my name to match my rebirth.
I love that, because the way you're describing it is like, if you have a hit song on the radio, you can't even enjoy it because you have to think about your follow-up, because that's the record labels are like, what have you done for me lately? And it's hard to even enjoy it.
Yeah.
So I get your disdain. So let's say like when you go to a Grammy party and you meet someone like Will.i.am, is that really the intent when you get dressed up to go to those parties, or like, I'm going to network, or is it almost just obligation from the label?
No, I mean, I think if I ever went to a party, I was thinking like, I'm going to network and meet some cool people, because ultimately, with or without a label, it's my career, you know? And like right now I'm independent, but I still have maintained a ton of really, really great relationships.
That's interesting. So when you meet someone like Will.i.am and you record a vocal and you don't even hear it until it ends up on his album a year later, like he takes the vocal that you did that day and he made a whole different track around it, not what you were expecting. Now, Will.i.am is a very prolific and capable producer, but that's still dangerous though, because what if the song comes out trash and you had nothing to do with the original idea and concept? Your lyrics are now wrapped around music that you had no hand in consulting with, no feedback. You have to like trust the producer and totally let that go.
I was happy with the outcome, so it was just interesting that I didn't hear it until it came out. But at the same time, I didn't really necessarily have much of a vision for myself at that time. So
when you collab with artists, let's say someone like Marilyn Manson, and then you work with a person like Big Sean, because a lot of artists aren't that versatile to where they can work with so many people spanning these multiple genres, are you picking up a little bit along the way from each person you work with?
Absolutely. I think the diversity that I've had with, you know, all the different people I've worked with has made me very open-minded in the studio creatively. And I've learned things that I love from all these different people. And then I've also learned things that I don't want to do. I think it's beneficial always for me to explore all different genres. I also came from such an eclectic music background because, I mean, I did a lot of musical theater growing up, and my mom and I sang like folk music. My dad was in a barbershop quartet. My mom also played Celtic harp. And then in the 90s, I got really into like grunge and yeah, I just like, I've always liked quality music, no matter what genre it is. And so now with what I do, sometimes I get bored if I'm like doing the same thing all the time. And it's exciting to like dabble in all different genres.
Yeah, I'm sure that's exciting for your fans too. So, you know, they're not just getting predictable music. And I'm sure you're aware of Kanye's conquest to expose, quote unquote, the modern slavery of record labels and how they rob people with unfair deals. A very gross example that comes to mind would be Isaac Hayes, who made $60 million throughout his career, but he only received 15% of it. Jay-Z sampled him. He didn't see a dime of it. So early in your career, you didn't know what a record deal was when you were offered one.
No.
I'm sure you have some PSAs that you could offer up as well, but if you could do it all over again, would you have went the independent route, or signing a label is fine, you just have to have more clarity when you sign the dotted line?
I mean, I wouldn't change anything of my past. I believe everything happens for a reason, and I learned a lot from being signed to labels. A lot of things that now I'm applying as an independent artist, but now I own my own masters, so that's nice. Yeah, I wouldn't change anything. And I didn't come from a ton of money, so having an advance and having somebody pay for like me to be creative and pay for my recordings and making music videos and stuff like that, like I never would have established who I am publicly without that help. And so I'm really grateful for the support that I got from my labels, and I'm also grateful to now be a free agent.
Yeah. And also, you know, when Eminem went to bat for you a lot too, like I Need a Doctor, like, hey, she's going to sing the hook. I don't want Lady Gaga. I don't want anybody else. It needs to be her.
Yeah, that was crazy.
Yeah, I saw this clip from like way back in the 90s on Howard Stern. There was this artist named Natalie Imbruglia, and she had this song called Torn. I don't know if you remember that song.
Yeah, I love that. Of course.
But the songwriter was Ann Previn, and she came on the show. And she performed the tune the way she originally envisioned it. And I think she's been kind of secretly carrying this grudge for like 20 plus years about it. Her version even sounds better too to me. And it's just so weird. So, you know, I look at like I Need a Doctor or tracks like Walk on Water, where the original idea was probably, hey, I want Skylar Grey to sing the chorus, but then maybe Rick Rubin wants Beyonce on there. And this tug of war. And I'm just kind of glad that you don't have to, you know, per se, now that you're independent, have to deal with that kind of stuff so much. It seems like politics.
I mean, I think that everybody just wants to have the best chance with their music all the time, even the big people like Eminem. And so, and he also told me one time, cause I think on that album, I wrote 4 songs, and he's like, I can't have you sing like every song on my record. So, you know,
hey, it could be he did a whole album with Royce the 5'9". You and him can just come out with a record together.
Why not? That would be cool.
As a songwriter, do you ever regret giving away pieces of your personal feelings to other people? Like when you listen to Lupe Fiasco, that song's about your grandpa, but that song now has transformed into something entirely different. So like if I look at all these songs that you wrote, there's probably a lot of pieces of you personally spread out across a lot of artists.
I love and hate the whole process of giving songs away, because it's exciting to have a huge artist that I admire performing my music. It's a huge opportunity and it makes money and all that stuff. But then, yeah, there's also this like part of me that's like personally attached to the music and the meaning and all that stuff. So every time I give somebody a song, it's like I have that little conversation with myself, you know, am I willing to give this up?
Well, now it's like, I'm not going to release albums anymore. I'm going to release songs. And I feel like this October is this giant push that you're giving your fans, almost spoiling your fans, because you're not going to be able to keep up that consistent output, right?
Yeah, but that's why I said just October. I didn't say I'm going to put out a song a week indefinitely. And it's way too fast. It's way too many songs. Because I try to do everything like 100, give it all 100%. And so I do a music video and I do visuals and all this stuff to help promote the song. And without having a label, I'm also doing things like running my own Gupta ad campaigns to try to promote my stuff on Instagram and Facebook, and like doing the marketing side on myself too. And so when you think about all of these different layers and elements that come with releasing a song a week, and also I'm producing and, you know, it's like basically every part of the process I'm like leading the way on. And it's just too much work to do. It's like been stressing me out. I had to cancel one of the release last Friday. I was supposed to drop a song and I had to cancel it. I couldn't keep up. I bit off more than I could chew this month, for sure.
But, you know, it's a learning process as you kind of get familiar with this new format. Absolutely. And I think you're like, if you're a Skylar Gray fan, you can find out behind the scene videos. You can figure out that a rose bush punctured a hole in your outfit for the video. Like all this little Easter egg stuff, like you can go as deep as you want because you're able to give the fans, you know, that level of detail and commitment that you couldn't have done otherwise. So I think people are like really responding to it, and I think they appreciate it.
Oh, cool.
And this new one, I heard the track features string work and the video is heavily inspired by classical composers. So you're...
Yeah. So, you know, what's so funny is when my publicist reached out to me about doing this podcast, like literally I just am in my little home studio all the time and making music and... Ironically, the song that I'm releasing in a couple days is actually very inspired by Beethoven himself. I'm using Spitfire string libraries in it, and so there's like huge string arrangements. And in the music video, I'm actually dressing up as Beethoven. or like a version of Beethoven, not Beethoven specifically. This is perfect timing. Dodging a bullet, dodging a knife. Oh, maybe I'm tripping and shit got me high.
Yeah, so I created this podcast with that name because I think if you take the naked ear or the casual music listener on the street, and you have, let's just say, you know, you have Dr. Dre's studio and you have that giant board and it's $1 million studio, and then you have a capable person who's in their bedroom making music, if it's done well, $1 million worth of technology isn't going to make your track sound any better. That was my belief.
No. Dude, and also it's like... I've recorded songs on GarageBand. It's like not what you have. I feel like it's what you do with it. Yeah, what you do with it. Like a photographer, for example, if they don't have like the skill and the eye, it doesn't matter how expensive and dope their camera is, they're still going to take shitty pictures. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
But a really good photographer who has a shitty little camera can take some really, really cool pictures if they have the eye for it. And it's what they do with it, you know? And I feel like it's the same way with music software and studios. It's, you know, using what you've got in front of you and making the most creative and artistic thing you can with that, and, you know, using it to the best of its abilities. So I love your whole concept.
Trust me, I'm fully self-aware on how annoying this next question is, because I know you've been stretching yourself thin with October and all the music, but I like to ask people if there's anything else they'd like to plug and promote, even though I don't want to look too far ahead from what you're doing in October, because it's a monumental piece of work.
I mean, yeah, I dropped a song every Friday of October, except for one Friday that I had to cancel because I couldn't keep up. So I would just say, go check out all those songs. And then I'm thinking about dropping the songs I released in October and the songs I released earlier this year, and maybe adding a few more and dropping like an album officially called Dark Thoughts, which was the first song I dropped this year. And just repackaging it and releasing it with a couple extra songs between now and the end of the year.
I think that's perfect because you can bundle it with all the merch that's been coming out too. So it has that theme.
Yeah. And then I'm going to be ready to move on to the next era.
Boom. You know, if you reach out to Micah Powell, I'm sure you guys could write the next hit song for Drake. Although, you know, I know songwriting for other people isn't much your thing anymore. But
dude, I haven't talked to him in so long. Need to hit him up.
All right. Yeah. All right, Skylar, my biggest hope for you is to create the best music of your life while at the same time continuing to remain safe at your home with Elliot. And you agreeing to be on this podcast brings a huge dose of validity to what I do as a creative. So
that's awesome.
I just want to thank you for your time and your music.
Of course. My pleasure.